Welcome to the Story Mine. I'm David Bullock, and I'm here with my co-host,
Kathy Barker.
This past week, Kathy and I were presenters at the Weber State University's Storytelling Festival in Ogden, Utah.
Dave and I were fortunate to have been able to tell stories to several hundred elementary school children and their teachers.
There were storytellers from all over the country, like Kim and Reggie Harris, Sid Lieberman, Lynn Ford, Peepa White, along with 50 or so of Utah's best storytellers.
We had a great time. I bet you didn't know that Utah had so many talented tellers.
Admission to the three-day festival is free, so make a note to attend next year's Weber Storytelling Festival.
On today's show, Dave and I are going to share stories from some of Utah's favorite tellers, Clive Romney and Rachel Hedman, two giants among storytellers, and they're going to be telling Utah historical tales. Clive Romney is a composer, songwriter, storyteller, and has many musical talents. He's executive director of the Utah Pioneer Heritage Arts. Rachel Hedman is a family folklore expert, a youth storytelling advocate, and a former president of the Utah Storytelling Guild. We will also be sharing a fiddle tune by Josh Goforth and David Holt.
Here's Clive Romney telling about Orson Adair, the boy freighter.
Jedediah Grant Adair, or Adair, as they say in southern Utah, began his married life in Orderville, Utah. Now, you all know where Orderville is, don't you? It's just north of Mount Carmel and south of Glendale. You can't miss it. Jedediah was a cattleman, dairyman, and rancher. But he figured that he could earn a better living for his rapidly growing young family if he also became a teamster, carrying his farm products and those of his neighbors by wagon to the larger southern Utah towns such as, there must have been some larger towns down there. Maybe St. George, Cedar City, Parowan, and as far north as Nephi. Well, in Jedediah's absence, his oldest son, Orson, had to begin caring for the livestock, moving them between pastures and to and from the barn, at the tender age of 5 years old. Orson was, after all, the oldest son. Well, by the time Orson was 7, he had developed such a gift at working with animals, he was kind of a cow whisperer, you might say, that he could handle a team of horses and drive a wagon around the ranch to do his chores. Now, he couldn't harness the horses because he was so small he couldn't reach up past their ears. But his mom would harness the team for him in the morning, and Orson would do the rest. Well, one day, just before Orson's 8th birthday, Jedediah ended up with 2 wagon loads that had to go in 2 opposite directions. Now, back then, freighters always traveled in caravans for safety. So Jedediah talked with Orson's mother, and they agreed to ask Orson if he'd be willing to drive the second wagon. Now, Orson had never been away from home, but in essence he replied, "I'll do it for my daddy and to make my mama proud." So they packed his bundle and sent him off with some teamsters they knew for the first trip of Orson Adair, the boy freighter, who was soon famous all throughout southern Utah. On the first day of their trip, the other teamsters hatched a plan. When they camped for the night, they camped near a farmhouse, and they sent little Orson to that farmhouse with a milk pail, a $20 gold piece, and instructions to bring back some milk for their evening meal. Well, little Orson obediently trudged on over to the farmhouse, knocked on the door, and when the lady of the house opened the door to see an 8-year-old boy dressed as a teamster, Orson announced, "I'd like to buy some milk for me and my teamster friends, and I can pay for it," as he showed her the $20 gold piece for which she had no earthly way to make change. From then on, every night, little Orson would walk back to the camp with a full pail of milk and the $20 gold piece. they got their milk for free because of this cute little miniature teamster. Well, one night, they got into camp late, and Orson had to walk to the nearest farmhouse in the dark. On the way back, Orson was so intent on not spilling any milk from the heavy pail that he missed seeing the edge of a dry irrigation ditch and tumbled in, spilling all the milk and banging up his knee so hard that he couldn't keep the tears from flowing, even though he just knew that an 8-year-old teamster wasn't supposed to cry. Oh, what was he supposed to do now?
They trusted me to bring 'em back the milk for our meal. But now I've dumped it in the dark and skinned my knee. I bit my lip just trying to keep the tears down inside. But now they've overflowed for everyone to see. It's embarrassing for someone who's as old as I am. But there's no way out of this except straight through. So I'll apologize and ask if I can somehow get more milk. 'Cause a boy's just got to do what he's got to do. I got to do it for my daddy. I got to make my mama proud. Bring this load safely across this rugged land. 'Cause my brothers and my sisters are dependent. It's difficult when I can't even harness the team. I ain't growed enough to reach up past their ears. So the other freighters help me, 'cause they say it's right smart to have a teamster who's just barely turned 8 years. But tonight, I really wish that I was home with my mom. But it'll be a week before my journey's through. So I'd better feed the horses, say my prayers and turn in. 'Cause a boy's just got to do what he's got to do. I got to do it for my daddy. I got to make my mama proud. Bring this load safely across this rugged land. 'Cause my brothers and my sisters are dependent. My mama proud, bring this load safely across this rugged land. 'Cause my brothers and my sisters are depending on me. I got to drive and deliver, got to drive and deliver, got to drive and deliver. Like a man.
Well, Orson walked back to the farmhouse, admitted what had happened, and the farmer's wife cleaned and bandaged his wounded knee, gave him another free pail of milk, and sent this little teamster, who so wanted to act like a man, on his way.
Now we'll hear from Rachel Hedman and her story, Pigweed.
Pigweed. The taste of that plant that follows the desert trails of Utah will torture my tongue through the eternities. That sour spinach in my mouth, the thorns that always caught into my throat as it descended to my stomach for the absolute culinary experience. I thought traveling to Salt Lake City and making it to that valley, finally arriving in 1851, was testing my strength. Or perhaps when my husband Jesse and I uprooted our comfortable home and traveled 230 miles south to Parowan. Pigweed came after Parowan. Brigham Young pulled my husband aside and asked if we would go with 54 other families to settle Panguitch, a place that didn't exist yet. Jesse said yes, and I followed along. We made it to the land. It followed that old Spanish trail by Bear Valley. And as I looked around, I turned to Jesse. Isn't this a paradise? Crimson-colored cliffs, rough-faced rocks, refreshing water in the distance, and few trees. Jesse laughed. That just means, Zilpha, that we'll be hefting trees from the mountains, and the sooner we build that fort, the better. Those Paiute Indians may not appreciate that we're in their territory. Everyone helped with the wood, and everyone became a farmer. As the dirt clung underneath my fingernails, I turned to Jesse. Aren't you supposed to be the farmer? More or less. But less is what we got. We planted in March of 1864, but winter decided to be early and laughed at us. Came during the fall time, and we struggled to harvest those crops. But the wheat was too green. We couldn't think what to do with it. All we could think to do was to boil that wheat. But it didn't last long, didn't taste the best either. And we still had many cold months before us. Then someone called out, "What about that pigweed?" Our stomachs growled. No choice. Even the animals knew not to eat the pigweed. If you eat too much of it, it can be poison to your body. And it wasn't long before the people of Panguitch demanded that two rescue teams be sent out for food. Now the nearest settlements were Gunnison, about 114 miles northeast, and Parowan, 40 miles to the west. Seven men quickly volunteered for Gunnison. It was the easier route, even though it was three times longer than going to Parowan. For a while, no one raised their hands to go to Parowan. But then, a familiar hand raised. My Jesse. We've been married for about 47 years. I shouldn't be surprised. Of course, you would be the leader of this group. Jesse looked into my eyes. Ah, Zilpha, nothing to think about this one. You know that Jens Nielsen is the presiding elder here, and his feet froze during that handcart trek. He still has that limp. It's my duty to go. When I heard that, I wasn't going to argue. I rushed into our dugout. I pulled out a quilt that had been with us in all of our travels. And I handed it to him. Now, while I was gone, six more men volunteered to go with my husband. And when they saw that I had that quilt, all the women went into their dugouts and came back with blankets and supplies. Our men could go on their way, but I still had something to tell Jesse. You know that this quilt has been through a lot. And there's something you need to know. Take care that not one stitch is missing. Take care no dust or dirt are there. For this fabric is fused with fervent fussing and love. So take care this cloth comes as it was. Take care that you return with it in my arms. He promised he would bring it back. And I watched as the two rescue teams went their different directions. But my eyes were always to the west, following the shadow of Jesse until I could see it no more. They had taken a cart and some oxen, and I couldn't wait to see it piled high with food. But then the question came, what were we to do without our menfolk, or at least the 14 men who had gone to find food? We had dances, and luckily, even though my partner was gone, I knew how to play the fiddle. And I played such merry tunes, such jigs, anything to keep my mind off the dangers that my Jesse was facing. But then there were always the quilting circles. How I wished I could bring my fiddle there and be some background music as the ladies talked. I was never all that good holding that needle and trying to push it through and tug it through three layers of cloth, especially with that batting. Sometimes I would prick myself and go, wow! But then I would think about my Jesse and how that cold must be nipping at his toes, hopefully hanging on tight to that quilt that I gave him. Many days went by, so many days. People worried. But then in the distance, there were men coming back. Now, from the direction they were coming, I knew that it wasn't the Parowan group, it was the Gunnison. But their cart, it was empty. Nothing. We asked them what had happened, and they said the snow was so deep they could not go any further, that they would rather be with their families. Somewhere was Jesse and those seven men, our last hope. Day after day, I waited. Some women lost hope. But I thought about my Jesse. All the years we've had together, he was the one who delivered our granddaughter. It wasn't me, it was him. And he's the one who everyone knows as a good marksman. He could shoot off the tail feather on a turkey's bum. Oh, if anyone could get through it, it had to be my Jesse. And then one day, off in the distance, I saw a silhouette. I didn't see a single feature, but I knew who it was. It was my Jesse. And though I may be a woman, a little older in her years, there's no shame in running and racing to hug your husband. And that's what I did. And as I squeezed him, I felt such dampness. And I noticed that it was the quilt that was wrapped around him, and it was dirty. I gave him a look, asking for some explanation. He looked to the ground a bit and finally told me the story. Zilpha, I know I made that promise, but you have to understand why. When we left, it wasn't far when we had to leave the oxen and the cart. The snow was too deep. We didn't know how we would get any further. We only took with us what we could carry. And one day, as that coldness creeped up our toes and feet and ankles and legs, I could feel it circling all around me. That was when I pulled that quilt out and I squeezed on it. I tugged on it, knowing that you were thinking of me at that moment. All the men did that. And when we thought we would die and never give the relief to our families, one of us said we needed to have a prayer. Why we didn't think of that earlier, but one of us placed a quilt on that snow. All seven of us kneeled down and we prayed with all of our hearts. When we stood after that prayer, we noticed that the quilt did not sink one bit into that snow. We knew that was our answer. That was how we could reach Parowan and then return home with food. So we laid down a quilt and then placed another quilt on the ground, walked to that one, picked up the quilt, dropped another quilt, walked across that one, and on and on and on until we made it to Parowan. Now, a lot of those people remembered when we used to live there. They quickly quickly gave us the food we needed. And finally, we made it to our cart. The oxen had nowhere to go. They were still there. They must have known we would have returned. So that is why, Zilpha, that is why the quilt is so dirty. You can forgive me. You've done it before. I looked at him long and hard. Yes, I have forgiven you before. But let me remind you of what I had told you. Take care that not one stitch is missing. Take care no dust or dirt are there. For this fabric is fused with fervent fussing and love. So take care this cloth comes as it was. Take care that you return with it in my arms. Now, Jesse Louder, I've endured many things with you. I plan on enduring many things with you. But there is something you must promise me. For the rest of my life, I do not want that cursed plant to touch my lips. Jesse laughed. We kissed. He promised, no more pigweed.
What a wonderful time we've had today listening to these Utah historical tales.
You know, it's interesting, but there's not a week goes by that we don't run into people that say that they listen to the Story Mine and enjoy these stories that we're bringing to you.
It's such a great opportunity to share stories, and that's what our show is about, encouraging each and every one of you to share your stories.
If you don't share your story with us, at least let your family know who you are and what your family history is.
If you'd like to share your story on the air, just contact us at thestorymine@gmail.com.
And be sure to listen to The Story Mine next Sunday morning at 8:30 right here on KPCW.
Goodbye.